Welcome to episode 5 of Confessions of a Casting Director, where you will hear advice, wisdom, and true stories from inside the audition room. I'm your podcast host, Jen Rudin. I'm so excited for today's guest, our first guest of the new year and new decade, my mother, Marcia Rudin. You'll hear Marcia's advice and wisdom from her own days taking me to my auditions when I was a child actor. Marcia earned a joint MA in religion from Columbia University and Union Theological Seminary and taught comparative religion at William Paterson University. She worked in the cult education field for 30 years. We might have a podcast chat about that down the line. Marcia was a resident in screenwriting at the McDowell Colony of the Arts, and 8 of her plays have received 13 productions in theaters and festivals around the country. She and my father are co-authors of Prison or Paradise, The New Religious Cults, and Why Me, Why Anyone. She's also published 2 novels, Hear My Voice and Flower Toward the Sun. Her articles and book reviews have appeared in such publications as the New York Times, ReformJudaism.org, the New York Daily News, and the Congressional Quarterly Researcher. Please welcome my mother, Marcia Rudin, to the podcast. So this is a very special episode because I am interviewing my mother, Marcia Rudin. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, where do we even begin? I want to ask you, of course, a few questions about what your life was like when you were, as you like to say, schlepping me around to my auditions. So we can sort of go back to my early childhood days. I also just want the listeners to know that you are one of the people my book is dedicated to, because I believe, Mother, you always said, when you get rich and famous, don't forget to let me swim in your pool. Do you remember saying that?
And also to mention me at the Academy Awards.
Yes, of course. So let's go back to the 1980s and down that road. And when did you think that I might want to be an actor? What was the first moment that you remember?
From about the time you could talk, you were obsessed with it around age 2-3. I didn't have anything to do with it. It just was like a calling for you from the earliest age on. You used to play casting director when you were a little girl and make programs, theater programs. You just always knew that's what you wanted. You wanted to be involved with theater and acting in some way.
I remember dragging Eve, my older sister, begging her to play theater or producer or office with me when all she wanted to do was watch Wonder Woman or Bionic Woman on TV, and I would make her do, our silly musicals, and we would sing The Gypsy, if Mama was married. I would drag her into all of my shenanigans. I do want listeners to know that in addition to playing all these theater games and producer office, Eve and I did also play hospital where we were doctors. Not nurses.
Yeah, well, that didn't pan out. So, but from an early age on, and then there was the time in third grade when you produced Annie, wasn't it third grade?
Fifth grade,
and you drove all the kids, to practically kill them with your demands, and the teacher was really not too happy, and in fact, I think did not even let me come.
I think that's right.
But, anyway, she wanted you to, go to law school. That was her idea of success. But it was just an early calling, which I think probably most people in the theater and kids feel. It's certainly not any of the mothers I knew was not their idea. Because in those days, it was really quite inconvenient. We did live in Manhattan, and a lot of parents had to come from the suburbs or even further away, but there was no email or even faxing. I don't think.
No.
We had certainly no texting or anything like that. And we had to go down. The manager would call. We had to go to some agent to pick up the slides. They were not, emailed to us or faxed or texted or anything. And it was quite a difficult inconvenience.
That's right. And I remember Daddy going over after work crosstown to get the scenes and Xeroxing them at the bodega.
And so I can only imagine. I actually remember you saying that if we lived in even New Jersey, you weren't going to bring me to auditions because it was too much work.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Fortunately, you know, we didn't have to make that decision. But and then, of course, you know, when in Manhattan, you get around by bus and subway, and it was difficult. And they only gave you, fortunately, I was not working in an outside job at that time, because they gave you 1 day notice, maybe.
Right.
To go to an audition. So you had to drop everything, and you had to get the sides early in most cases, and then drag down to wherever the audition was, and that they were never easy to find. And so it was somewhat, it was quite a difficult feat, especially in those days. Now it's probably easier with, you know, being able to get the sides emailed or however it's done now. But there were none of these modern technology.
Oh yeah,
helps
nothing at all. Well, there's a lot of really fun classic sort of audition stories that happened in my childhood. I wanted to, you know, by the time I was going to eighth grade by 1985, had been auditioning for a few years, and my manager was from, had seen a bunch of us up at Stage Door Manor. And let's talk about the summer of 85 and the famous after school special, how it was your anniversary with Daddy, and you basically were on the road for 24 hours driving to visit Eve at Jewish camp and then, or music camp, and then picking me up for one final audition. Do you remember that day? Oh boy.
Oh yes. Oh, yes.
Talk about sacrifices that parents have to make for their children's careers.
It was our anniversary. I forgot that. Yes, we were up 24 hours because we had to pick you up from acting camp.
Right.
And take you into the city where your wonderful manager offered to put you up for what was left of the night. And we were, I guess, at our country house. I don't quite remember, in the Poconos, and you were in the camp in the
Catskills.
Catskills, and we, fortunately, the theater camp was a little loose in its regulations. So we arrived there about 1 or 2 in the morning, I think.
Yeah.
And were able to, you know, get you, which most camps that would never happen. That would never have been allowed. And fortunately, you had a wonderful manager who, you know, you hear so much now about sexual abuse, et cetera. You know, we never had to worry about any way that you were treated by these people. So, yes, that was quite a long day. And you did get the part.
I did get the part. And what ended up happening is that they had cast the girl, but she then got a bigger movie. She got a Disney movie, I remember. And so they needed to see me one more time. And then I took the bus. I slept at Jean Fox's house in her guest room. And then I think I took the bus back up to Stage Door, the short line bus, which took, you know, like 3 hours to get to the Catskills, with my pillow by myself. And then I got back to camp. And I think I finally got the phone call that I actually booked the movie. And Jack Romano, may he rest in peace, our wonderful artistic director of Stage Door, announced it to the entire dining hall. It was like a big success story. But that I love that story because it just shows the sacrifices and the fact that this business for parents is not at all about soccer games, six weeks in a row with the uniform and guaranteed games. It's about this never knowing, you know, highs and
That's
lows,
right.
ups and downs,
That's
and
right.
and having to just show up and be there. And I, you know, you are not at all a stage mother, very practical. I seem to remember you saying, don't ever get excited till we sign the contract, and, you know, don't get your hopes up, and just keeping me very as practical and grounded as possible.
Where we tried to do that. And in fact, in that time you mentioned with the picking up a camp, we were pretty assured you were going to get the part, or I don't think I would have done it. I don't
right.
think we would have done it. They said the girl, you know, the other girl was leaving, and we were pretty assured. But that was a pretty kind. Plus, oh no, wait a minute, you're not finished yet. The rest of the day, we had to go up to your sister's music camp.
That's right, and you fell asleep on the grass or something.
So I forgot about that. So we had to go drive up to her camp, which I think was in the Berkshires, and yes, that was quite a long day, but it had a happy ending.
It did.
But it's really no picnic. I was lucky, as I said, I was not working. and was able to be flexible with my time. But a lot of parents aren't in that situation. A lot of mothers are working now. I guess you can hire, you could hire someone to take you around. That's probably what people do. Then there was the instances where I did have to be with you on a couple of sets, and fortunately was able to do that. And that was generally a happy experience.
Yeah, we had a good time. My Father the Clown, which was an NBC Young People special, that was where they wanted me to gain 10 pounds, remember, to be the fat friend. That's what I remember from that. Anyway, Jean Fox said, no, she's not going to gain 10 pounds. You can put her in a sweater. And we flew to Cincinnati, you and me. And they offered, would you each like your own hotel room? And we said yes. And that was just a luxurious week because our hotel rooms were these huge suites. And we each had like an enormous amount of space. I was 14, so I didn't need to be in the same room with you. And I feel like that was one of your happiest weeks because you had some privacy.
It was wonderful.
You were right.
Well, of course, you know, you never got a movie where some of your clients might get, where you're someplace for weeks or months.
Right.
That would be, I'm sure, quite a difficult situation. This was only a week, and then the other after-school special was a day or so right in Manhattan.
That's
so
right.
That was not a problem at all. But, you know, parents should know that if the child gets a long movie, that could be quite, and there are different experiences. Some of the mothers have wonderful experiences and they're in wonderful accommodations, and some of them aren't. And, you know, you used to tell me of marriages that would break up because of the separations. So you never were in a situation like that where we didn't have to pick up and move to California.
Right, almost with growing pains, but not quite. Didn't happen with growing pains. And even with growing pains, I remember you getting worried that you were going to leave even daddy behind, and we were going to go to L.A. and make $5,000 a week or something, and you were worried that they would affect your marriage and the family. And I didn't end up getting that and ended up having my bat mitzvah and getting that after school special. But let's talk about the one time I really saw you. I saw you twice having the time of your life in terms of your being with me on set. Back to Cincinnati, I remember we had to film in this shopping mall in Florence, Kentucky, and we could only get in there at midnight. So it was an all-night shoot, and it went on all night. And I remember looking over at you with the other stage mothers, and you were smoking and eating and laughing, and one of the mothers fell backwards in her chair or something. Remember that? You were giddy on no sleep.
Well, of course, we were up all night. I think they even said didn't have to go, but I think we did. You know, we had to be on the set. And, that was hilarious because they could only get the shopping center when nobody was there.
Yeah.
And we ate. There was a lot of eating, as I recall, too, on the set. And I don't think we were drinking. They wouldn't have had any of that. But, I'm sure we were smoking. Yeah, I was sure bumming with the other. That wouldn't be going on today, I'm sure.
No.
Smoking on the sets. But that was fun. And
I think the other
one was kind of fun too.
But Sesame Street was the one that always makes me laugh because Daddy was usually at work and, you know, you would take me around. And then I remember when I booked this one episode of Sesame Street, again, I was 14 but still needed a guardian. And I think the two of you duked it out to see who, you know, Daddy said, oh, I'm going to take the day off and I'm going to go. I want to go, Marcia. And you said, no, I'll go. I'll be there. And I was so mortified because both of you came to the set.
Well, we were fighting over who got to take you, and we both went. Oh, I hope you were embarrassed. I didn't realize that.
No.
We were so excited. We were so thrilled. There was, you know, there was Big Bird's costume hanging there and everything. It was just, he insisted on going. We're so sorry we lost Carol Spinney, by the way. You know, speaking of Big Bird. But that was a most enjoyable experience. But most of the time, of course, it was up to me. Although I know, I'm sure there are fathers who do it. now. And there was, remember, the one father who did it. I don't know whether the boy had a mother. They lived on a boat.
Right, Thor Fields.
Hudson.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were in a play with him. And that was a sort of an unusual situation, I think. But it causes a lot of family problems. People shouldn't have any kind of illusions about this being an easy thing to do to reorder your life. And even just the day-to-day auditioning, as we said before, but if something actually happens, and you were too young to run around New York by yourself at that point, Manhattan, so even if you got something like the plays, you know, we had to take you to rehearsals. So it's quite a commitment of time and a commitment of energy. And in those days, there were no cell phones or anything. So I guess, you know, we took a book, but you ended up kind of talking with everybody and watching what was going on.
Yeah. I think I started to go to auditions more when I was like 12, 13, 14 by myself, but certainly not for any bookings. Now, if you could do it all over again, you know, look, I didn't have any, sorry, I don't have any children of my own. I have grown stepchildren, but I always wondered if I'd had a child, if I would have put him or her in the business. And part of me, of course, thinks, would I have been the worst kind of stage mother, or would I encourage my child if they showed some talent? And it's neither here nor there, because there's, you know, there, I don't have a child. But would you, if you could go back in time, would you have said, I think you should stay in regular school and you know, go to Temple Youth Group and not do this? I mean, what do you think? Or are you trying to make your children's dreams come true as a parent?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you asked that, Jennifer, because you were just so committed to this at a very early age. And there are kids like this, and it may not be theater, but who, you know, test champions at age 8 and 9, things like that. You were just, that was what you wanted to do, and there was no arguing with it. I suppose we could have said, no, you can't do it. But you were just, and actually, I think unless the child really has that kind of, practically, I'm using the word calling, I know that's sort of like a religious term, but really the motivation and the desire to do this, you know, I wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But in your case, you were so strong-willed and so motivated for it that, and other kids, you know, they're that way with ballet or gymnastics. I think, you know, kids are born with just certain talents and ambitions, and then other kids don't have any idea what they want to do. So I, looking back on it, I don't think we could have done it any differently. People criticized us. My own sister did. She didn't think kids should be doing this. But I sort of felt I had to just do what you wanted. And I think unless a child has that kind of commitment, it's not a good thing to do. You know, you kind of get dazzled. They can make a lot of money, et cetera. You also have to think of sometimes, I don't know if I should say this for your listeners, the downside of a child achieving fame at an early age, and then they have to face the rest of their life. And we've all read stories about child stars who've not been able to make that transition.
Yeah.
But in your case, fortunately, we really never had to worry about that. You know, it didn't happen, which was probably very disappointing for you at the time. But you were just so strong-willed and motivated.
Hmm.
And that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing for a young person to be. And you're sort of born with it. I don't know musicians. I mean, you're sort of just born with a talent, and you have to have the ambition to see it through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so hard, the highs and lows, you know. I speak to so many parents who want answers and a trajectory about how it's all going to happen, and I always say it's not soccer. There's just no one way to get there, and the time is so precious. You know, your 12-year-old is 12 today, and they're going to be 14 tomorrow, so it's tough. But
yeah.
I want to share some of the words of advice that you always gave me, which was just to, you know, you always said, we love you no matter what, even if you don't get the part. support, though, is really important. And I just want you to speak a little bit to the home and the stability of the home and how important that is as well when you're putting your child into a world that is so frenetic and not, you know, not friendly and not, has no, there's no, what's the word? There's no rhyme or reason for the why this business is so crazy. So can you talk a little bit? Because I felt like we always had a very stable home and, you know, dinner on the table every night and all of that, and how important that is for families to have the home be a foundation so that if the child is experiencing highs and lows, at least they can go home to something stable, hopefully.
I would think that would be very important. We were just lucky that we had that. And that, as I say, I wasn't working and pulled a different, you know, million different ways like some of the women are now. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's very important, and I hope that I was always very reassuring to you if you didn't get a part, very supportive. I hope I was. I don't really remember, but yeah, I should think. I mean, it's a chaotic world. You know that more than I do, and you need as much security as you can have. That would be necessary, I think.
So what did you think about, first of all, I think I was actually just sort of a one-trick pony and not a very talented actor, ambitious though I might have been. What did you think about the choice about a casting career? I know you always wanted me to become an entertainment lawyer or something, but casting and writing, which is also not so stable, I mean, how do you feel about my success now?
Well, I want to disagree with you. You were an immensely talented actress.
Oh, actor. Okay.
We say now.
I know.
Immensely
actor
gifted.
Now.
You were gifted. You were natural. And it's hard to know whether you would have been able to play varied kind of parts because you were sort of railroaded into these, you know, the cute best friend parts.
Mm-hmm.
But you were in a Holocaust play where you died. And you were wonderful. No, I disagree with that. You were very talented.
That's very nice.
Well,
of you.
You know, I think it was always evident from the beginning you weren't going to go to Yale Law School. Entertainment lawyer would have been a good profession for you. But I think what you're doing, you're very well suited because you have good people skills. First of all, you know the theater world and the movie world and the entertainment world inside and out. You know all of that. You're an excellent teacher, and you do a lot of teaching. You have a very good head for business because you're running your own business. You have excellent people skills. You're wonderful with the mother, with the parents, and you've received many letters. And this is not true of all casting directors or agents. Some of them treat the parents like garbage.
Yeah.
You're wonderful with the children because, of course, you went through it yourself, and you've received so many nice letters from parents and children, too. I think it's a perfect profession for you, just a little chaotic because, you know, you either have a lot of work or you don't have any work.
Right.
And the writing, you know, is... you know, I just want your audience to know, if you need to make a living,
You can't.
I mean, you just can't. If you want to do it after work, that's fine. Do it in your lunch hour, or if you marry a rich spouse, or you inherited a couple $1 million from your parents, that's fine. I started writing when I retired from my job. It's a wonderful hobby, but there's no... That's even almost worse than acting, I expect.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very chaotic profession. I think you're suited to it, all your personality, your human skills, your knowledge of the theater, your gift in working with children, which is not always the case, I'm sure. Your ability to be flexible, I think that you have to be flexible, which can be very difficult.
And patience is not always my virtue. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. You have a lot of energy, and you have a lot of pizzazz. And as far as advising if you want me to advise parents whether they should steer their children into this, I expect it's probably a pretty chaotic profession right now. I know it is. Entertainment law would be a little more stable, it would seem to me, if your child is at all oriented in that way. And you did have childhood acting friends who did this.
Yeah.
And are very successful. You have to, you know, if you need to really support yourself, and I don't want to be sexist here and say, you know, you fortunately happily married to someone and you're not dependent totally on your income, but, and I don't want to be sexist and say men should go into entertainment law and women can be, you know, the lesser income, but as far as earning an income, unless you're, it would seem to me to be a bit iffy.
Yeah.
I hate to be negative, but...
Oh, about casting, yeah. No.
Especially now with all the changes and the way that the programs are delivered.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to, you know, we used to have three, you know, TV channels. I'm showing my age here. And you worked for one of those channels, or you worked for MGM, or you worked for Paramount. And now, I don't have to tell you, but there's streaming, and there's Netflix, and there's this, and there's that. I don't even understand it. And it's constantly changing, and companies are selling and merging. And I think if you could encourage your child in any other profession, that would be a good idea. And, of course, there's lots of other adjacent professions. For example, our granddaughter wants to be a stage set designer or lighting designer, or she's very interested in costume design, that kind of thing. So there are other professions linked to theater and entertainment that, or a camera person.
Right.
We have a friend whose son has won several Emmys. He's like freelance cameraman. And, you know, there's ways you can be in the entertainment world that are a little more stable in terms of actually earning a living.
Yeah.
So, I don't like to be negative or anything, but you have to be realistic in such a changing world where your profession, I guess all of them probably, are changing so rapidly.
Yeah. Well, thank you for not being a stage mother and for being, you know, a responsible, loving. And by stage mother, it has so many negative connotations, but I do think that I've seen so many different types of parents, and it's always fascinating to me that you try to make your children's dreams come true while your child is walking into a room being judged by complete strangers. You know, it's just very stressful. So thank you and Daddy for, you know, being wonderful parents.
We were blessed with you, and I'm glad that you're doing this, because I think it's really a good thing for you to do. It's not for everyone, and it's a nice hobby. There's lots of community theater, etc. You know, we are down here in Florida, where many of our theaters down here are non-equity. And I want to tell you, there are some fabulous actors that are non-equity that are doing this. I don't know, they work in a bank in the daytime or whatever. And it's a tough, you know, but there's ways you could pursue it as a hobby later in life and actually earn a living or do something a little more stable. I'm not trying to be negative. I don't want to discourage people, but I think they have to really face reality.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And I know that when you give people advice, one of the things that you do is to have sessions with parents and give them advice. And I know that you're very frank with them, which I'm sure they appreciate.
Yes, I am, because they're asking for some concrete, you know.
And let's not forget, we haven't mentioned this yet, there is a very large financial commitment involved.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, forget, you know, the headshots and all that, and the lessons, and the this and the that, and, you know, there's a lot, there could be a large outlay of money involved, and people should be aware of that.
Yeah, that's actually the initial investment chapter of my book, where I talk about that, because it's cost money and nobody pays you to go to an audition, and getting across the George Washington Bridge and getting into the city and parking your car and going to Starbucks to get that cappuccino before you have your audition, where you famously said, have a cup of coffee and find your personality, which is in the book. I know you say you don't remember saying that, but I know you did sometime.
I never said that.
You did. You did. And it's the best advice, because it just, and actually my Andy, my husband, will say it in the morning. He's like, I'm going to have a cup of coffee. I'm trying to find my personality, you know, which means, you know, no matter what time your audition is, you have to walk in there and have your, you know, find your personality and you know, and be great at your audition. So I always think that's a very funny quote. Well, Marcia Rudin, my mother and grandmother to Emma and Eve and my mother and just celebrated her 50th wedding anniversary with our father, Rabbi James Rudin, who we'll have on a future podcast episode. Thank you so much for your time. And this is going to post in 2020. You're going to be our first episode in 2020, which is really exciting to launch the new decade.
Words of wisdom from my mother, Marcia Rudin. For more episodes of Confessions of a Casting Director, visit jenrudincasting.com/podcast. And if you love the show as much as I love doing it, please support us with a contribution so we can keep bringing you more stories and more episodes. You can find the contribution link also at jenrudincasting.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.